Blog Talk Radio. Everybody's got the fever. This is something we all know. Fever isn't such a new thing. Fever started long ago. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Lenny Godfrey's Straight No Chaser. We are going to have our traditional town hall this evening. Very excited about the guests that we have this evening. But you know me, before we start, I also have to always do my little housekeeping so that everyone who is listening for the first time, or if it's not even the first time, if you haven't heard, you know, been back for a little while and you've forgotten how it all works here, I tell you where you are and how to listen to other episodes. We're up to about 75 episodes now. I'm very, very proud of that. But I also know about it because I also had to do some work on my computer and had to count every one of them. And I want to thank you all for making that happen since the March of 2021. So now I'd like to tell you that you are on blogtalkradio.com/ S is in Sam, F is in Fred, T is in Tom, H is in Harry, and the number 2. If you want to call in, you can call in at 516-453-6063. We've been doing this for a while now, and tonight this town hall is about the state of the arts. Usually we have a speech on the State of the Union. But right now, I'd like to get the opinions of my guests. There are 3 guests here. All of them are native New Yorkers. We have one who may join us. She is in Arkansas right now, I think. No, or Arizona right now. And I may have to try to call her in because the board, I think, locked her out a little bit earlier. If we can get her in, but she is also a native New Yorker. We had one other guest that was going to call from California, but she is in the medical profession and had an emergency that she had to deal with tonight. So I'm going to introduce you to my 3 guests, myself, who are going to be talking about how we are dealing with the arts, all the different facets of it, especially in the last 2 years. That's where we're really starting. Let me give you some background before I even bring them on. I would say at the beginning of 2020, after the pandemic set in, I was trying to find a way in order to find out the temperature of everybody, how everybody was doing. The pandemic hit everyone in a very different way. Everybody was in different situations. So I made one video and I asked everyone how they were doing. And if they could communicate with someone who may be a little bit younger than them, who had not gone through a disaster like we had. I'd gone through 2 or 3 earthquakes when I lived in Los Angeles for those 10 years. We've had snowstorms. We've had the first virus of HIV. We've had a lot of things in which we have plowed through. But when you're younger and you don't have that background, what happens is you think that this is it. I'm never going to survive it. I wanted everybody who had a little bit of experience to reach out to some of the younger people to make sure and to ensure them that we would work together to get through that. That started this on the road of my doing a little videos, and then finally, by the time we got to January 2021, I was introduced to this kind of media, Blog Talk Radio, and started this talk show. So catching you all up, I will introduce you to the 3 guests that we have this evening and how I know them, and then they all are either participants in the arts, have arts background, patrons of the arts, or all of the above, and how the pandemic has really influenced their lives and has influenced how they have been dealing with the arts. That's what we want to talk about this evening. And so with that, I'm going to go down the line. First, I have one of my oldest friends, and I don't say that because we are old. I say it because we've been knowing each other a long time. and this particular person has done a town hall before, has been a guest a couple of times on the radio show, and is a patron of the arts, is a performer of the arts, performed when she was younger, went to music and art, and then went on to go to George Washington High School and then got degrees all over the place, but is a constant patron of the arts and a good friend. And she is my friend, my sister friend. She is Deborah Fudge Rim. Hello, Fudgy.
Hello. Good evening, everyone. How are you?
Good evening.
Yeah, good evening. We're doing good. We're doing good. We can't wait to get into this conversation because it's one where I think a lot of people don't know how the pandemic has affected all of us on both sides of the stage. The next person I've known, I think I've known these two people, probably about 3 years after I met Deborah Fudge Rim. So I met in the environment of Hunter College, and all of us being native New Yorkers. The first I'm going to introduce the female of the group, and I've had her on the show and found out that she was almost a concert pianist, and I had no idea she had any background in anything at the arts but acting. She kept that a secret for 99 and a half years. And we have been working together at the nonprofit organization that we both belong to, Essence of Acting, now for 7 years. And how that came to being is that my next guest, we were just wondering if I could find actors who wanted to work on something. And the first thing that my next guest said was, well, you need to call Brenda. And I said, well, of course I should. And I guess Brenda will, you know, she will tell you some of the stories of how all of that came together a long time ago because she remembers better than I do. But this is Brenda Denmark, Brenda Thomas Denmark, because when I knew her first, she was Brenda Thomas, and then she married the fabulous Leon Denmark. You have to say that so he can let us stay on the radio. And now she is named Brenda Thomas Denmark. Brenda, say hello to everyone, please.
Hello, 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 hello. How's everybody this evening?
You have seen Brenda on numerous commercials and on Broadway, off Broadway all the time. She's been a wonderful performer. And then there is finally my friend who I met. I think he was about 16 when I met him.
No. I was 14 when we met at NEC.
That's how you, and then of course you came on over to Hunter to see Lloyd.
Hunter.
Okay. Yes.
Right.
Yes. And so I met him at NEC. And what most people don't know is that there was, I think we were in the last class of the NEC that they had auditioned about 250 students. And being in Lloyd's class, he had instructed me that this had happened. And my classmate that a lot of people, she hasn't been on the show yet, but I'm trying to get her on, Joy Morton Wiley, decided that she was going to take my picture and her picture, because the assignment was for us to get pictures and resumes in class, and go down and submit them. And then after she did that, told me we had an audition. And that's how I auditioned for NEC and the class that they were doing.
Wow.
And Chris Kaiser was the teacher. And this is
Chris Kaiser was the teacher, and
don't talk yet. I haven't introduced you yet.
My bad.
And Chris Kaiser was the teacher, and we had and I'm sure he will tell you other people who are in our classes, and that you'll be familiar with their names. and outstanding amongst the younger people in this class, because all of us were teenagers, really. A couple of people were a little bit older. Was this young man who was fascinating to watch, and who was just friendly and ongoing, and who had already had a lot of theater experience beyond what I had done because I had just started. And his name was Julius Hollingsworth III. And now, Julius Hollingsworth, you may speak. Hello, everyone.
Julius Hollingsworth Jr. That's Jr. But yeah, we had some interesting people in our class. So Karen Kendall Evans was in our class. She was mm-hmm. in eventually was in Runaways.
Yes.
And has been as the head of
Coleman. Was it Lucille Coleman? Seal
Coleman was in the play that I wrote with you.
Okay. All right.
It was Karen Kendall Evans. There was Sherilee Ralph. There was Sarah Dash. There was Torian Black. And there was a guy named Samson. I'm trying to think of all the different people. It was April. Some of these people I haven't seen or heard from in Jan Coles. And some of them have become, you know, teachers and principals, and others have stayed in the business, and as you well know, that you know,
they've survived. They have survived.
Yeah.
Now, to get off of that, I want to stay on the subject of where we are, because all of us have survived so many different things over time.
Mm-hmm.
So, starting with you, Deborah, tell me how the pandemic has affected your life in general, and then get specific to me about the arts.
Okay. Well, of course, when everything shut down, that meant staying in and not going out unless you were just going to the store or the grocery store or the drugstore. And so my life became, I became this person who just stayed in my apartment. I had tickets to 4 Broadway shows. Of course, they were all canceled. I did get my money back, thank goodness. But it was devastating. And I think because, you know, we were so afraid because this was an airborne illness and so different from anything that I have seen in my lifetime. So it was quite scary. And I would say one of the things I did, because I'm a retired teacher, is I was in constant contact with colleagues of mine, some retired, some still in the system. And it took the Board of Ed, the Department of Ed, a while to decide how they were going to work out everything. And of course, we're all familiar now with Zoom and all the other things that many of us have had to use in order to stay in touch with others. But it was very scary in the beginning. So I would say 2020, full of anxiety, not knowing what was going to happen. And I'm quite sure with people in the arts, it was even more devastating because that's their livelihood. So financially as well as emotionally, it was a very scary time.
So Fudge, when it hit then, so you just shut down, and there wasn't a lot of theater to go to in the first place, because after a while, everything shut down for all of us, and we really didn't know. Was there any other form of art that took, not just took the place, but allowed you to have an outlet?
I've a couple of organizations, and so they immediately went to Zoom. And we started having, like, I have a chair yoga class that I take, and I have a meditation class that I take, and a scrapbook photography class. And so we decided that, so one of the things we did was we linked up, and this was maybe 2 or 3 weeks after. So everyone had to get used to even what the word Zoom meant in 2020 and what it was all about. And so that was my connection. And of course, with family, I was constantly in touch with my sister and other members of my family, my daughter. But, you know, her job shut down. My daughter started working from home. So for everyone, it was a very scary, different type of lifestyle that we all had to get used to very, very quickly. But the art for me became staying home, listening to music that I could listen to from my radio cable stations and also on my iPhone, and also staying in touch with people through Zoom. Once we were able to make those connections, Zoom became really the way in which I connected to just about everyone.
Were there any other things where was there, did music do something for you? I know it was hard. Visual arts was hard because then you had to go to museums and everything, and that was all shut down. But things that you could acquire at home, television, were there any particular kind of outlets that gave you some artistic escape through the arts? Yeah.
Yes, definitely. As I told you, I love photography, so I'm in a photography scrapbooking group. So I worked on the scrapbooks that I was making, and I had just left a cruise, a South American cruise, just got off the ship on March 7th. Everything shut down the week after that from Brazil and South America. So I just started looking at the pictures and working on my scrapbook. And I constantly, you know, we talk about how music has been an influence. I could never walk into my house and there wasn't a radio on or a record playing. That's how I knew someone was home when I was younger. So music always is a way for me to find some sense of security as well as comfort. And certainly, and I listen to all different genres of music. So sometimes it was classical music, sometimes it was R&B, sometimes it was jazz, folk music, music from the 60s, 70s, 80s. So it all depended on how I was feeling. But I always find that music is definitely the central force for me. And that's what I did. I listened to a lot of music, and I was able to connect by phone and eventually by Zoom to friends and other people.
And so that's one of the outlets. That's one of the things that I want to convey. What about you, Brenda? Being an actor, the impact was twofold for a lot of us. With Fudge being now let me just say her background is in the arts, because Fudge was a dancer as well as a vocalist, going to school and everything, and then became a patron of the arts. So what as a patron, as a pedestrian, as a citizen, as a performer, what did the pandemic do for you? And then we're going to get to the point is how we got to this point, because what Fudge just finished talking about is phase one. So now we are thinking about phase 3 or 4. So where were you in phase one as it hit us? Say we're now in, we worked in New York in February, did Greenwood in February in Metropolitan College in New York City. Okay. So we all, you know, we were all together. After that, what was your life like?
Right. Well, first of all, I was doing I had a part-time job working at Telecharge. So that shut down completely. Then we were home, you know, unemployment, that whole thing. Some of my younger friends had always told me, you know, you need to learn how to do, you know, to shoot for yourself and do your own stuff. So I was like, I ain't doing that. I'm not doing that stuff. That's why they got the agents for me to go and go to the casting director. And, you know, that was me.
Yes.
Well, everything shut down. Casting directors was going out of business. You know, so they was losing their offices and stuff. Then they wanted everybody to do this self-taping thing. You know, the commercial was far and few between anyway. So it got worse. I tried doing it. Fortunately, a blessing for me was that my daughter in love lives, we live here in the same house, and I would have to have her do it for me every time. I couldn't have Leon do it for me because that wasn't working. But I could get Jessica to do it for me because his patience was short. So yes. I could have her do it for me, you know, and then work through that. But I'm sure it was not, you know, it just is not the same thing as going to the studio, to the casting director's office, standing there and then professionally shooting that audition.
It's the socialization that we miss. You know, those right. of us in New York would always yeah. brag about L.A. Everybody in L.A., you know, you never see anyone because everybody's in their car. So we would always right. see each other. And that's the one thing I found. It was true when I was out there. And I was out there for a long while. But there are those mm-hmm. of us who did make that happen. But it was an effort. But New York, it was effortless because, you know, it called for all of us to be in a room a lot of the time. Sometimes yes. we weren't. Sometimes it was a luncheon yes. or something. You know, what about not seeing each other anymore?
Yes. Yes. That
what happened?
Of course,
what happened
had a heavy effect, too. Because a lot of times when you go to an audition, you would hear about other things. You know, people talking. Yes. You learn mm-hmm. about some other things. People, I find in New York, I never went to L.A. to work. I always said if I go to L.A., it's going to be with a job. And I did go with a job out mm-hmm. there. I was in proposals. I was standby for Scotty mm-hmm. Caldwell in proposals. So I was out there then. But I never wanted to go out. I heard all the horror stories of how people were. And then they got, you know, this and that. And I was like, uh-uh, that's not for me. But here in New York, there's a certain camaraderie of the actors that will share information. You know, you get together, you might go out afterwards and have some coffee or whatever. Or, you know, mm-hmm. you're on your way to the audition and they say, you run in late. And they say, oh, girl, don't worry. You know, they're way behind us there. And, you know, that kind of thing. So yes. you're right. That camaraderie and that you see people you know and all that was all cut. You know, it became very isolated.
Yeah,
I don't think that really in doing in those self tapes and all of that, they to me, and maybe that's because of me and my phobia about it or whatever, really did not get a true essence of what you could do.
Yeah, I think what happens is that we. You know, progress is one thing. I mean, young people coming into the business don't have
yes.
that experience. So this is all that they know now. You know, this is your self-tape.
Yes,
and you go there. You do. Some people can self-tape. Some people have to pay people to self-tape because they don't have the instrumentation or the room. But this is what they do. We have a history of where what we did as actors, it was a socialization. It's what's like coming mm-hmm. from a dance class, coming from a voice class, walking down Broadway, walking down 7th Avenue, you would see somebody mm-hmm. coming from class mm-hmm. and you'd stand up and talk to them for a long time. The socialization
mm-hmm.
that we created in our community has been erased mm-hmm. by all of this, and it's something that we probably need to try to work on, but it's hard because these are airborne viruses, so just being around each other, we could infect one another if we're not careful. So our business... No, go, please.
And I find also as a result of what happened with the pandemic, a lot of the casting directors who knew me and knew my peers, they were going out of business.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So it's a whole other crop that has come in. They don't know us.
No.
Or our work.
Well, you know, I mean,
that's when you have to get on casting networks and you have to get on all these. And you know, I'm not up on that stuff. I wasn't up on that stuff. I wasn't up on that stuff, girl.
It becomes a different kind of a
business.
You know, talking about that is kind of what it evolved into. And we've had to make adjustments as we've all done. I mean, that's the way the industry has gone. But what I do miss mm-hmm. is that whole thing of seeing people? Now, I was out in L.A., and I'm going to tell you, I know that there's a lot of horror. I had no horror stories. I really did. I had a great time, but I went to stay 3 months. I stayed 10 years, and that is because, when I got involved, and I got it, you get one job, then you get another job, then you get another job, and then people go, oh, she's there, So it evolved like that. It didn't happen overnight. It took about, I'd say, 3 to 6 weeks, and then it started. The horror stories, no. I had some adventures with some guest shots that I would go in. Disappointments, I would say. Sometimes you get disappointed. Mm-hmm. You're with people from afar, and you think they're fabulous, but when you have to work with them, they're totally different. But you kind of get past that. You get past that. But that was in regular time. Yes. So now we're in this time. So now, Julia, what has changed for you in your life? I mean, where were you? You along with all of us performing. Where were you at that time? Fudge had just gotten off a cruise. Brenda was working and doing our show and working. How did it hit you? How did it hit you?
Well, it was interesting because I used to go up and down 145th Street. there used to be a yoga studio, the library, and the gym. And that would be my strip. So I would go to the gym, then I would go to the library, and then I would go to yoga studio. Up and down, up and down. Well, with COVID, that shut that down. There was no, the library was closed for a while. The yoga studio was definitely closed, and the gym was definitely closed. A friend of mine, they had a show that got rave reviews that said it was, it's black caviar is what they said. It was called a show called Skin Folk. It's black caviar. And after they got that review, the lights were out. So the lights were out right after that review. The COVID stopped that. I don't know what's happening with that show now, but I haven't heard about it yet. I'm sure it will reappear with a review like Black Caviar. I assume something will happen with that show. It stopped things in its tracks. I knew people who, because of COVID being what it was, some people that didn't even have a place to stay. They were sleeping in their car because, they didn't have people that were renting or, semi-renting places, rooms and stuff were like, we decided not to do that right now, because of COVID being what COVID is. It was a very trying time for many people. And the little network that I had developed where there's like a whole bunch of like little filmmakers that used to go to the Starbucks on 145th Street. Lord, there's so many filmmakers in that Starbucks. It was just absolutely wonderful and then crazy because what happened? Starbucks was closed. So it completely changed many, many things in the beginning. And then it, made other things open up because there were different jobs that were created based on, if you were in the film industry, having to become, COVID compliant.
Exactly.
So, you know, there were jobs that were created basically so that the people that were actually still filming could still film. And
So we all now, we've all gotten past my phase one was interesting only because a lot of the work that I had done had been on Zoom already with the company, had been on Zoom with different boards and with performances. I had done some. So it became a continuation, but it became an avenue of learning to how to go from phase one in that, the foundation phase, to a far more, I'd say, sophisticated way. I wouldn't say professional, but sophisticated way of presenting my work. Now, we're going to phase two, and the phase two now is the phase when finally, after a while, in the fall, in summer and fall, the vaccines were coming in and the inoculations were coming in. How did that change things for you, Fudge?
Well, once the vaccine was available to people, it certainly allowed me to go out more and to see friends and do some of the things that I used to do, such as, go to a diner together and have lunch, visit friends that, you know, before we weren't actually going into each other's homes to visit. It allowed me to see people that I hadn't seen in quite a while. So it certainly did open things up. So I kind of think of that song from The Wizard of Oz, come out, wherever you are, because that's how I felt, that we could come out and be a little more present, even though, you know, I always carried my sanitizer and my gloves and I always had a mask on. I still was able to at least be in the presence of people and not be as afraid as I was in the very beginning of the pandemic. So
how did that affect your going to the theater? How did that affect you going to the concerts or anything, the cinema? How did that affect you?
I actually didn't go back to the theater until this year. So I still didn't feel comfortable. Even when they opened up, I think like September of 2021, a lot of the theaters mm-hmm. started opening up again. I didn't mm-hmm. actually go back to the theater until March of 2022 mm-hmm. to see a play. And so I was really still hesitant to go into an enclosed area with a lot of people for a long period of time. So at the restaurants, it was still, you know, they had the tables 3 to 6 feet apart, and they had us wear a mask until our food arrived, and then we could eat it. So we still had those kinds of things, and I felt better going to a place that was outside because I felt the fresh air around me was better than being confined in, you know, in an environment where it's just the same air floating around while you're eating or drinking. So I didn't do that until this year, did I actually go into a contained environment. All I can say is that it was nice seeing people again, even though I was only seeing half their face because we were still all mad. It was still wonderful to at least see people and be able to talk to them instead of just always, you know, on FaceTime or on a Zoom call.
Mm-hmm. Well, Brenda, once the vaccines came up and the opportunities of work then were a little bit more available, how did that fit into the routine of life for you? Was it readily, was it something that you considered? Were you waiting for a little bit more time? You and Julius, how did you all think about that? Not about anybody else's decisions, about what the declarations were. How did you personally feel like it was affecting you and what you wanted to be involved in?
Well, once the vaccine came out and we did that, then you felt a little bit more comfortable going out. I always had on my mask. You know, it's the whole mask thing is a funny kind of phenomena. It has been for me, at least, because as time has gone on, I've had both vaccines and we had the booster.
Mm-hmm.
We were supposed to go on a cruise in January, but we didn't go because we felt it was just not yet. But we did go in April. Now, the funny thing is that on the cruise, there were times when I came out of the cabin and was walking around and didn't have the mask. I had the mask around my neck, didn't have it up. And I said, you know, it's a funny kind of thing. You kind of relax. You have to be really conscious of it, for me. I have to really be conscious of it, putting that mask up, because there were days I would come out the house and forget it, and then I see somebody, I say, oh, let me run back. You know, I have to consciously make it a part of my routine, let me put it like that.
Yes.
To have that mask on and have it around my neck and pull it up and, you know. But I have been blessed. I must say, thank God, we have not been sick. And I thank God every day for that.
Yes. You know,
thank
him
for that. You know,
because
I've been in some crowds. I went to a convention the end of June with like 35,000 people.
Mm.
Thank God I came out of it okay.
But you
came back okay.
You know, there are precautions.
I was masked, but there were times, Vinny, that I didn't have the mask up. That's crazy. This is crazy.
Yeah.
But I think back on it,
my concern is us and how we're going to proceed. Julius, how did your life change with the vaccine, in the arts and attending things?
I guess I've ended up finding little jobs. I ended up becoming a COVID compliance officer working on different projects to make sure that the sets are safe and that kind of thing. So it was it's like how do you make it work for you? That's the one thing I realized about this, the business that has not changed. It is when I started off, I said, oh my gosh, I don't understand. I don't fit in. I'm just this, you know, this little crazy person and not the, you know, part of the all these different crews. But what I realized is that you fit in where you're supposed to fit in, and your people find you when you're being authentically yourself. And so if you are part of the crew that's, you know, dissing everybody and then that's your crew. You should be with those people. if you're not that person that's this, that, and the other people, then that's not your crew, and you should remove yourself from that those people. So I think Andre DeShields says it best. He says, if people's eyes don't light up when you walk in the room, then you should leave.
Yes. His quote is, I want to be in a room where when I walk in the room, I want to be around people when I walk in the room, their eyes light up.
And there you go.
That is something that we all should strive for, that we strive for bringing people around us who really mean the best for for us. But now, yes. I don't want to veer too far away, because the point that I'm trying to make is, you know, it's very, very interesting. I was worried about the young people initially, but I became more worried about those of us who established than the younger people, because this was a world that they were creating and they could function in it. We had to learn, as Brenda was saying, you had to rethink about the mask. And even though they did, it was a freedom, I believe, for me that I had to adjust, that was taken away, that I had to adjust to. I thought it was necessary because, of course, it does keep us safer. But it is that. It's a thing I believe that we have to think about. When we get where we are now to this point where I think we're, and I make no comment about it, I make no judgment about it, and you all know me well enough to know I'm a Virgo and I can be judgmental. So I'm making an effort to be as neutral as I can. We are in a point now where we're like a divided kind of society. There are those people who believe that we're in a point where we're post-pandemic and we, you know, we are in a relaxed arena. There are those people who believe that everybody is going to have to get the virus one way or the other. So the vaccines have made it livable, that we don't have to get rushed to the hospital, that all of those things are very important. Mm-hmm. You know, that it's not life-threatening for some people. We don't know that for everyone because we don't know everybody's health situation, but for the majority of people, it doesn't. And then there are the people who think that we are still in a pandemic and want to be, you know, they want to be masked when they go out. We want to not offend anybody else who doesn't, but also have the ability to do that. How does that affect us as we go to the arts, whether it's the theater, whether it's the museums, whether it's the cinema? How does that affect us, and where are we going to go with it? Can anybody think about where we're going to be in a couple of years in the arts, and how can we sustain our arts within this whole pandemic arena? That's my question. We're up to where we are now, which is like phase 3 or 4, and we still have to be able to sustain ourselves in the arts. The arts is going, they're going on. There are a lot of different opinions about how it can go on, whether it's without masks, with masks. And how do we feel about, you know, about that, and how do we fit into sustaining the arts, this thing that we love so much? Brenda, you know, your thoughts.
Well, I don't know. I might not be speaking exactly to the point that you're saying, but in terms of going to the theater, I know they lifted the mask, but you didn't have to wear the mask, but I'm wearing my mask because I'm in there with all those people sitting right up next to me, you know, laughing, talking, hooting and hollering, and carrying. No, I'm going to have on my mask in there. I wouldn't feel comfortable being in that situation. We go to restaurants. Okay, you don't have the mask. What was really good initially when and I think Fudge talked about it, is it okay if I call you Fudge?
Oh, it's quite all right.
Well, I, you know,
I like that.
I try to be official like to call her Debbie, but, you know, we all call her Fudge.
You know, that they had the petitions up. So at least that gave you some little level of comfort. You know, the petitions between the tables. So because you had to take your mask off to eat, you know.
Yeah.
When
yeah.
you're in the airplane, I have on my mask. I was flying back and forth and stuff. I had on my mask.
Mm-hmm.
So the only time I would take it off to eat, you have to take it off to drink some coffee or whatever. But after that, back on. But I see people walking around with that up in that closed area. Like, no.
Yeah.
So for me,
you know,
I have to continue, wearing the mask. And because every time you turn around, you know, every couple of months or whatever, there's like a new virus.
Right.
What about you, Fudge?
Well, I'm a big believer in following the science, because everyone's going to have an opinion, but it's the science that tells us, you know, what exactly is going on. From state to state, it's different sometimes, because it depends on the amount of people who have been affected and how low they've been able to keep their numbers down. Here in New York...
And the politics of the state, too. The politics of the state.
Yes, which is why I don't even get into the politics. I say, what are the doctors and scientists saying? Because I really do feel, you know, they're going to give us the exactly what is happening to our bodies, and it's not getting into whether you're for this person or that person. It gets ridiculous after a while. It really does. Now, as everyone was saying, you know, certain restrictions have been lifted. When I went to the theater in March, you were required to wear your mask, and they walked around, the ushers walked around with signs telling everyone, put your mask on, and they even went up to certain people who looked like they had taken it off or it was, you know, hanging down, and they said, mask up, and I was very happy because I felt we're in this contained environment, and we should have our masks on. Now, I went to the theater in July, just a month ago, and it was optional. But they did ask before the curtain went up that since the people on stage cannot wear masks because they're singing, dancing, and speaking, please put your mask on. My daughter and I did not have a problem doing that. We wore our masks the whole time, except when we were sipping something or eating something. So right now, things are, that's how it is. You can go from state to state, and it can be very different. I carry disposable masks with me all the time. And whenever I go inside a store or a building, I put it on because that's usually where there are lots of people and we're indoors. But as soon as I walk outside, I take it off, especially in the summer. It's just so hot and confining. But I always have masks with me, and I try to make sure that I have a couple of disposable masks with me every time I go out.
You know, it's interesting what you said about the theater, too, because I just went to see a play down at the Public. And to go into the building, you had to show proof of vaccination.
Wow.
And yes, you had to show. I had to show it on my phone that I had been vaccinated. And then in the theater itself, they wanted everybody to have their mask. They had a sign up, mask up, please, mask up, for everybody. Everybody had to have their mask on.
Good for them.
So
good for them, because March, it was required, and I did have to show that I had the vaccines. But in July, I just went to see MJ the musical. It was optional. And my daughter and I kept our masks on the whole time. The person I was sitting next to had his mask on, but the person sitting next to my daughter, which was from Texas, he had no mask on at all. So it was optional. So it's just interesting how it's different all over the place. Everyone has their own rules about what they want to do. But I believe that when you're indoors with a lot of people in a confined space, we should all wear our masks. And I also feel that, you know, the disposable masks, if people don't have them, give them out. That way they can't say, I forgot it. Just hand them a mask and tell them, please wear it. Good for the Public Theater.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I know that people who are on Broadway and off Broadway are tested every day.
Okay.
Every day, the day of. Even the ushers are tested, and the costume dresses. All of those people are tested. And I even think one of the Thoughts of a Colored Man. I think it was this show. The show ended up closing because they didn't have someone to cover for an actor because, you know, more than one person got sick at a time. And so it, but they are very stringent about that in terms of actors' equity and the testing of the mm-hmm. performers and the people mm-hmm. who surround them in mm-hmm. in the house. Mm-hmm. That's and the testing on sets now is you know, there's even pay for, you know, getting tested when you're on a union set. So it definitely is a whole new world.
It is. But I just did a audition for a commercial, and I on cap, you know, for when we do the beginning, I had to say, told I'm fully vaccinated and I have my booster and then my name and then the agency and then do it.
It's in the slate.
So they're
now.
Asking that up front.
Yes, that's the slate. You know, I didn't.
Yeah, the slate. They're asking that in the slate.
A lot of things are different. That becomes though that kind of information, I think, is not only it's a part of the employment that people ask. Mm-hmm. Now I have to say this: it is less than 10 minutes left, and I want to make sure that I see some familiar numbers that are on the board that have made it in, and I want to make sure that there are no questions for us, because if there are, just press that number one or let me know, because we're going to, you know, be gone here in another 8 minutes, which is amazing to me because it's been an incredibly interesting conversation trying to find out where we're going from where we've been. And that's mm-hmm. all. I mean, we know that we have to sustain the arts, and we want to do that, but we also want to make sure that we make our audiences and our performers feel as safe as possible, mm-hmm. so that because you can't really do your best work under duress mm-hmm. of thinking about your health. So mm-hmm. there, you want to be able to do your best work in the environment and make those best decisions. And so I'm hoping that we come up with solutions that allow us to do our best work in the safest of environments and somehow find out to get back some of our socialization. And, you know, it may not be as important, I think, to other generations because they didn't have it as often as we did. But I don't, mm-hmm. I think it's important for the generation that I speak to and for, and that we are, first of all, we are getting less and less in the industry and our patronage, mm-hmm. you know. So we want to be able to keep that connection. We want our audiences to be able to be comfortable to come out and see us. And we want to be able to keep the connection and the relationships that we've formulated over the years with performers, and so that, you know, the only time you don't see them is when you hear something has happened to them. You know, the only time, you know, you see something about them. So that's something that we're going to have to all work on. I mean, that's one of the things that I realized, that we've got some work to do in order to sustain the art that way, the practical way, the way of executing it. And it's something that we all have to have a part in. I think some of the unions are doing the best that they can. But I think the opinions of actors and how they're comfortable has to be respected. And I send kudos to those theaters who put that first and who make sure that that is something that they do. That's one of the things that, you know, I really wanted to talk about, especially what would make you the most comfortable now if you were going to be in a play. What environment would you like to be in, Julius? What would be your perfect world?
Oh, it would be well sanitized, lots of latex gloves, lots of masks, a restoration comedy with a mask on everybody.
Sounds like surgery.
It's a magical world with everybody in a mask.
What about you? You know, we must say before we end this that our friend Julius has been awarded after 40 years of showing evidence and everything. He's been awarded his image.
Yes.
And congratulations to you, Julius. We're going to talk about that in September on the program. But congratulations.
Thank you.
Emmy award-winning actor Julius Hollingsworth. What about you, Fudge? What would the perfect world be for you to go to the cinema, to go to the movies, to go to a concert, to go to the theater, to sustain anything? What would make you the most comfortable?
Well, right now the science is still telling us that, you know, the virus is still around. So I would like what I saw in March, where they make it required for everyone to wear a mask indoors and to only take it off when they are, you know, eating or drinking. But basically they might just be, they wouldn't be eating or drinking inside the theater, but to keep it on in the theater, because I think you have to keep everyone safe, and keeping everyone safe mm-hmm. means keeping the actors that are on stage safe, since they can't mask up. So I do believe that masks should be worn, and that the theaters should have disposable masks available for people who say they don't have one, because that's, of course, an excuse some people will give. And you just say, here is one for you, and everyone has to put it on. So in March, it was required. Now it seems to be optional at some of the Broadway shows, and I think it should be required still.
What about you, Brenda? We got 1 minute for you to say.
Okay. I totally agree with what Fudge said. And if it's the play that I'm in, that they test everybody every day to make sure everybody is okay.
Well, with that, now we're going to Zoom, ladies and gentlemen. You're going to see these three wonderful people in a little while on the Zoom. The fact that everybody's got their Zoom addresses. And the next time also you'll see me will be August the 17th, where I will bring you Richard Finkelstein is one of the most magnificent set designers that I've worked with. I think I've been on about three or four of his sets, and he created a set for my one-woman show. So we're going to be talking to him. You talk about genius, and I will be posting some of his designs over the next week or so you can see what he's about. But sign off on this one. Thank you all for your opinions. This went fast, did it not, everybody? You know?
Absolutely.
It did. That's fun.
it always does. Yeah. I want to thank you. And I do want to just pose that there are things that we need to do to keep the arts going, and for us, all of us, to attend it and be a part of it. So I will see you, everyone. Thank you so much for listening to Lenny Gosby Straight No Chaser. I will see you and you'll hear from me again on August 17th, Richard Finkelstein. And until then, I will see you on the radio. Thank you so much for Lenny Gosby Straight No Chaser.
This is something we all know. Fever isn't such a new thing. Fever started long ago. Never know how much I love you. You never know how much I care. When you put your arms around me, I get a feeling that's too hard to bear. You give me fever. When you kiss me, fever, when you hold me tight, fever in the morning, fever all through the night. Listen to me, baby, hear every word I say. No one can love you the way I do, 'cause they don't know how to love you far away. You give me fever.